The Talk of the Northwest. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the Greg Hughes Show here in Highland Radio. How are you all doing? Indeed, it is Wednesday, the 21st of January, 2026. It's great to have you on board for another couple of hours here in the show. We've got loads to pack in, as you can imagine. And we really want you involved in the programme. If you want to WhatsApp or text us, I'll give you those numbers right now, if that's okay. 086 60 25000. So if there's something that you want to talk about, an issue you want to raise, or a comment on matters we're talking about, that's a good way of you getting in touch. Your WhatsApps and your texts. If you want to give us a call, we are keen to answer as well. 074 91 25000. And emails come into us, comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the programme, we're streaming live across the socials on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, so you can watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick if you're at home or wherever you happen to be. And across Facebook and X, just search Highland Radio. You'll see we're live there. And just a reminder for you that if you want to podcast this show, it's available on the Highland Radio website, but now available for you to like and subscribe to on Spotify. Just search out The Greg Hughes Show there and also on iTunes. So no excuses. It might suit you to listen a little delayed. We don't want you to miss anything. A lot of talk about roads at the moment, just before I go to the papers. And just an update for you. We did raise the issue of a broken manhole lid on the Ballybuffet to Donegal Town Road because there was some issues there. The cycling club was on to me saying, listen, can you raise this? Because someone's going to come off a bike, or if a car or a lorry or a bus hits this pothole or this manhole, there was a big drop on it, right? It could cause serious damage or a serious collision. So Donegal County Council are aware of it now. They describe it as a hazardous manhole cover on the hard shoulder at Barnesmore Gap. So they've contacted a utility company who was sending a team out to make it safe. So that was what days? That was yesterday. So that problem should be resolved now. But we also had lots of concerns about potholes elsewhere. There's a bad pothole as you come into Castle Finn from Liscooley. Just broke my car wishbone and front shredded tyre. This car only passed the NCT last week and had new parts, but only 2 weeks ago, warned other road users, has been reported to the council. My car's now sitting in a garage, undrivable, and I've had to pay a recovery person to lift it, and it was as it was on a main stretch of road and needed to be moved. So that's a big pothole into Castle Finn from Liscooley. I'd advise that listener, you are entitled potentially to make a claim for the damages to your vehicle because you have a reasonable acceptance, or you should be able to reasonably expect the road to be in a certain condition. So don't rule out, please, a claim in relation to that. And lots of you then messaged in because we put that post up on social media as well. Tina says, yes, the road between Castle Finn National School, I beg your pardon, the road between Castletown National School is an absolute joke. Potholes are that big, the Waynes can't even walk to school because of them. Pat McGuire Piper hit the same pothole as that gentleman earlier. A side road beside Castletown School in St Johnson is very bad with potholes. The potholes are massive. That Lauren said that. Tracy also chipped in. Convoy Junction at Doherty's Shop has two bad ones, and the road to Letterkenny from Convoy is terrible. They filled them and it washed out again. And Helen from Burton Port to Cadoo is so bad after all the roadworks to update the water. So there seems to be a particular issue in and around Castletown School. Some children can't even walk to school. Other cars have been damaged by it. Okay, so just thought I'd give you a quick rundown on that. The Finn Valley Voice this morning, a GoFundMe has been launched to aid the family of a St Johnston toddler who's battling for his life in a Dublin hospital. Little Davin Corran is in critical condition in Crumlin, a son of Barry and Megan Corran. Davin has been diagnosed with myocarditis and cardiomyopathy, and he's also battling with coronavirus and parvovirus infections, as his heart and lungs are not able to function on their own right now. Davin is being supported by an ECMO machine, a form of life support used in critical situations. Lots of you have been so generous, I know, in relation to that GoFundMe. If you are inclined to pray, please pray for this child and their family and keep them in your prayers. And sometimes, you know, if you can't donate or if you don't have the money to do so, you know, good thoughts, good wishes, positive vibes, positive thoughts and prayer would be good as well too. We were talking yesterday about a tax liability for PAYE carers. Now, it is a means-tested, it is a means-tested payment. So the reality is probably 1 in 10 carers might end up with a tax liability. The arm of the state that pays the carers' allowance now shares information with revenue and vice versa. So some people are getting letters with relatively big bills. But also too, the income for a carer is going to reduce, of course, if you take tax off it, if you weren't aware that you were already liable for tax, right? So reading in the Irish Independent, carers have said tax information sent out to them by revenue has left them frightened and added more pressure to their already strained lives. Revenue wrote to 34,000 family carers, notifying them carers' allowance or carers' benefit have always been taxable, and warned those who have not been declaring the payments as income that they may face a face back taxes, which is kind of at odds as what we were hearing yesterday from the carers group. They were hoping for some sort of an amnesty from revenue. I have my reservations as to whether that will come to pass or not, but I hope I'm wrong. Payments to carers have always been subject to taxation, but were previously self-declared. Under the new system, tax on the income from the payment would be collected in real time, similar to other payments from the Department of Social Protection. Taoiseach Micheál Martin told The Dáil yesterday that he believed 90% of carers would not be liable for tax, but we're talking about the 10% that are, of course. Revenue has said it met with Family Carers Ireland and Care Alliance Ireland in April of last year to outline the new processes. Tracy Carroll is the mother of an 11-year-old Noah and 9-year-old Willow. She told Liveline that Willow has complex medical needs and requires 24/7 care, and then went on to talk about the impact this might have on her. And we've heard our own stories here as well. But as soon as we get any clarification in relation to that, we'll bring it to you. Of course, on a global scale, green land is dominating the front pages of all the papers of the Irish Times. US President Donald Trump has been accused by French President Emmanuel Macron of trying to subordinate Europe in his pursuit of Greenland. Leaders of several European Union states are preparing to mount a diplomatic blitz over the next 48 hours to convince the US president to retract his threats to levy fresh trade tariffs on countries opposing his plans to buy Greenland, a Danish territory. When asked how far he would be willing to go to acquire Greenland during a White House press briefing last night, Mr. Trump, you'll find out. I watched some of a press conference he did yesterday. I couldn't make head nor tail of the majority of it. It's 1 year in office during his second term. But it seems that Europe are starving him of oxygen. He's looking to meet a series of leaders in this part of the world, and they're not necessarily going to be widely available. And that is one way to get at that guy. He doesn't like that. What do you think about this story in the Irish Daily Mail? Gardaí to be given new powers to spy on mobile phones to monitor criminals' activity. Right, so that shouldn't bother us, criminals. Maybe that the, you know, it's good that their phones can be spied on, but obviously people will say, well, you know, where's the line here? New legislation will allow the force to use controversial software to gain access to encrypted messaging services such as WhatsApp. It's understood the spyware is similar to Pegasus, a software found to be unlawfully used by the Israeli police to monitor citizens and foreign nationals. However, some groups are alarmed about its potential abuse and use against members of the public. The Irish Council for Civil Liberties says it has very serious concerns about this shopping list of surveillance powers. But Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan said yesterday the legislation is long overdue. Under the proposals, there'll be a new legal basis for the use of covert surveillance software as an alternative means of accessing phones, laptops and other devices for the investigation of serious crimes and threats to the security of the state. So on the face of it, I have no issue with this. If you're involved in criminality and you are using encryption to try and circumvent the law, and, of course, create victims in the process, you know, that sounds like a good thing. As long as it's not abused, as long as this type of power doesn't become useful to monitor people in general. And we have to be reassured of that. Or maybe you don't want to see it at all. I don't want to put words into your mouth. Taoiseach Enoch Burke speaks as though he has no free will and that it was somehow predetermined He'd returned to Wilson's Hospital School after he was released from prison last week, a judge has said. This is in the Irish Daily Mirror. Mr Justice Brian Cregan was yesterday giving his written judgment on his decision on Monday to order Mr Burke to be committed back to Mountjoy for contempt of court for continuing to trespass at the school. He said Mr Burke always had a choice and had been given his liberty to work on a new case he's bringing, trying to halt a disciplinary appeal panel hearing into his dismissal from his employment. He knew if he went back to the school, he'd be imprisoned again, he said, adding, most rational and reasonable people would have chosen to stay home and work on their case. But looking through some of the comments, because a lot of mainly online news resources are posting the stories and updates on that story, and Enoch Burke has got an awful lot of support. And it doesn't really matter. You can get into the ins and outs of why he's in prison and what court order he breached, but people go back to the fundamentals, and that's his views on certain issues, right? And when people are commenting, they strip it right back to that and continue to offer him support. There are certainly a lot of people out there that are in agreement with him, but they're not discussing or debating the rights and wrongs of him being in prison and as to why and that he's breaching a trespassing court order. They just go back to the fundamentals, the core reason why this all happened, and go, you know, he's being mistreated. But others also believe that he's his own worst enemy. Ryanair, always the kings of marketing, it has to be said. They don't really need to buy ads because they're very good at marketing without them. And there's a spat ongoing now between Michael O'Leary and Elon Musk, two billionaires. Now, Elon Musk could buy and sell Ryanair 15 times and still have change. But still, Ryanair are cleverly using a spat with Elon Musk to promote a sale of seats. A sale for idiots, they're calling it. Only Ryanair could get away with that. But anyway, there's a big press conference that will get a lot of attention today. Michael O'Leary, it was already scheduled, but he's fallen out with Elon Musk since. And Ryanair have launched a big idiot seat sale, especially for Elon Musk. Musk is becoming broiled in a digital row with the budget airline CEO Michael O'Leary over whether Ryanair should fit the ex-owner's satellite internet service Starlink across its plane. So Ryanair said, look, there's too much drag. We're short haul. We couldn't charge enough to justify the extra fuel that we'd be burning. Elon Musk says, you know nothing about what's going on. He says, I'm going to buy Ryanair. He can't buy Ryanair. And on it goes. No such thing as bad publicity. And as I say, Ryanair are the masters of free publicity, as outlined by me telling you they've got a big idiot sale on at the moment. Good morning, Councillor Declan Meehan, member of the Regional Health Forum. Declan, how are you getting on?
Thanks. Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you on the programme. Right, now, you've been raising the issue of access to the Rapid Access Prostate Clinic in Galway. The HSE has confirmed that it's open and operational following concerns raised that limited resources may be impacting timely access. So before we get to the HSE response, Declan, the concerns that you were raising and the grounds for them.
Yeah, thanks, Greg, and thanks for the opportunity to come on to talk about this. I think it's extremely important that this issue is raised. A number of GPs from across the county had raised with me this issue of long waiting times, much longer than the recommended time frame of 20 days for people who were referred to Galway to the Rapid Access Prostate Clinic to be seen within that time frame. And this is an issue that's been going on for some time. I had raised these clinics back at the Regional Health Forum in June of last year. So this was the latest kind of, I suppose, representation that was made to me from GPs in relation to this. So I've written to the Regional Executive Officer, Tony Canavan, Dermot Monaghan, and other members of the NCCP team to raise this issue and to ask for clarity around it. And I'll explain exactly where this issue is coming from. GPs are noticing that when they're referring a patient to Galway, to the Rapid Access Prostate Clinic, they're not being seen within the recommended 20 days. And in addition to that, GPs have spoken to colleagues in the Rapid Access Prostate Clinic and have been told that the wait times are, you know, too long, and that the language has been used, even that the referrals are effectively closed. So that's why I'm raising this issue. This is an extremely important referral pathway. For those who don't know, of your listeners, Greg, you know, if prostate cancer is suspected, men are referred to this clinic. And the idea to be seen within 20 days is that, you know, early treatment is obviously critical, but also it's either to rule in or to rule out prostate cancer. So it's also to alleviate anxiety and to provide people with peace of mind, you know, if a diagnosis has been ruled out. And those targets are not currently being met, is what we're hearing from GPs. Mm-hmm. So I believe it's incumbent on me as a member of the Regional Health Forum to raise those issues on behalf of patients and on behalf of GPs, who account for 91% of referrals from Donegal to the Rapid Access Prostate Clinic.
Yeah, exactly. And you're getting it right from, you know, the people that are they're dealing with this and dealing with people's anxieties as well. There's something of a firewall between, you know, the patient and rapid access. And they put that in the title themselves. Obviously, you are polling Donegal GPs and hearing their concerns, Declan. Is this it's not uniquely Donegal, though, is it? Is this rapid access clinic, you know, under-resourced? Are other counties that would be referred to it experiencing the same difficulties? There isn't a specific Donegal issue here, I presume.
Well, I suppose we can't be sure if this is a Donegal specific issue, but it's very unlikely to be Donegal specific. When we look at the Rapid Access Prostate Clinic in Galway, it is the busiest Rapid Access Prostate Clinic in the country. It serves the counties of Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim, Mayo, Roscommon, Galway, and also the Midwest region of Limerick, Tipperary and Clare. And that's something that I would also like clarity from the HSE on, because there is a Rapid Access Prostate Clinic based in Limerick Hospital. So I'm not sure why people are being referred into Galway, particularly if that's already under strain and is having difficulty in meeting the 20-day turnaround for patients referred into it.
The only part of the HSE statement I've actually seen, because it's just not in front of me, is that the HSE has confirmed that the Rapid Access Prostate Clinic in Galway remains open and operational. We'd hope so, right? That's not the question here. This is about how long it's taking patients to be seen in it. In your inquiries, if you found out any further information from the HSE as to why these delays are happening and if they are working to reduce them.
Well, Greg, I suppose some of the frustration here as well is that I wrote to the HSE on Friday to raise this issue, and I haven't received any response to that. And my understanding is that they have issued a statement around it, but my opinion is that that statement doesn't address the issues. They say that it is the clinic remains open for referrals, and as you say, you would certainly hope that that's the case. But what they haven't given any information on is around the current resourcing that's in place or the current average wait time that patients are experiencing when they're being referred to, and if the KPIs and targets are actually being met of patients being seen within 20 days, because obviously we're hearing from both patients and GPs that they're not.
And yesterday we were discussing the fact that Donegal is below the national average in terms of the five-year survival rate for breast cancer. Limerick has the lowest survival rate. And then you talk about how, you know, Limerick has a rapid access centre. And, you know, you start looking at all of this kind of stuff. And it, maybe this is this is where it all begins, if that makes sense, Declan. You know, hopefully people eventually get into this clinic and get the treatment they need. But we don't know how much this conversation we're having now contributes to maybe data we might get in a year or two about five-year survival rates for prostate cancer. Clunky way of trying to frame it, but I think hopefully you understand what I'm trying to say.
I do absolutely understand what you're saying, Greg, and I think that that's exactly why this issue being raised is so important, no less than, I suppose, the issue of breast cancer survival rates. But we need to raise these issues, and it's our job as public representatives to represent what healthcare professionals are saying and also what patients are saying in order to ensure that these issues are addressed. So when GPs are coming to me and saying that people are not being seen within the critical 20 days limit, which is recommended under the National Cancer Control Programme framework, then that needs to be raised and that needs to be addressed. And then when we're talking about the response that the HSE have issued, not to public representatives, but to the media.
I haven't
media
actually got
inquiry.
That yet. I was just checking with Caroline. We got a headline from it, and I think that's really what I read out there. I haven't got it yet either, Declan, and maybe they'll send it to you at the same time as they send it to me. I didn't want to give the impression maybe that they're ignoring you and sending it to the media. They might issue it at the same time, but we'll sort that out. But it will be very interesting to read what it says and how it sort of aligns with what you know is happening on the ground here in the county.
Yeah, and I think, look, it's the key thing that we need here, Greg, in relation to any healthcare data, because it is critical to how people are treated and survival rates for all of these illnesses. What we need is complete transparency. We don't need a response that glosses over the issues. We need one that tackles it, because in order to fix a problem, we need to know what the problem is.
Yeah, and hopefully the penny's dropped with the HSE that we don't give up here in Donegal either, you know, and we're not mushrooms. Maybe that's why it takes a little longer to get a press release out now. Declan, thanks so much indeed for raising this important issue with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Look after yourself. That's Councillor Declan Meehan, independent member of the Regional Health Forum. And as soon as we get that press release from the HSE, will bring it to you. As I say, you know, we were talking yesterday, and I mentioned this to Declan, about outcomes, and we want equal outcomes to everybody else, don't we? But if you have delays in accessing, treatment, and you have a delay in accessing treatment because you're having a delay in assessing whether or not you need treatment and what type of treatment, eventually these are us, eventually down the line, it's us that perish when we could survive. You know, so we can't ignore it. It's really important. Rightio, a Malin listener is listening to Highland on Alexa. It keeps going off. We're feeding Alexa and we're feeding you Google speakers. Astonishing amount of people listen to this program and Highland General in general on smart speakers. So we're sending our stream to the powers that be behind Alexa, let me put it to you like that. So unless there's an internet problem or some sort of a server problem, we checked, it's not on our end. So hopefully it's resolved really, really soon. Never any harm to switch on and off these types of devices that connect to the internet. Your router, for an example, you should reboot your router every single day. It's got a tiny little memory. And as soon as that memory starts clogging, it starts not working correctly. And if you live beside a road and cars are passing and constantly pinging off your router, it doesn't do any harm. It doesn't affect your internet, but your router will slow down and, you know, not work as well as it should. And those smart speakers have little Wi-Fi systems in them as well, and they need to be switched off and on from time to time and ensure that they work as effectively as you want. Massive pothole on the Rock Hill Road heading out of Letterkenny. These potholes they need to be fixed as they're a hazard and could cause a serious collision, especially when this road has surface water on it at night time. On the issue of healthcare, great news that Donegal's new 110-bed community healthcare facility in Letterkenny is progressing well. But who's going to staff it? Donegal just cannot attract the quality of health professionals we need. Well, the one thing, the positive, this is fantastic. It's a fantastic facility, and fair play to all of those that campaigned so hard over the years to have it. It has to have a positive impact on our health service. We're getting information that now that, you know, the regional, the surgical hub is being planned for Letterkenny, and that there's more positive moves from the health minister and the HSE as it relates to Letterkenny, that it's not maybe quite as difficult to recruit as it had been in the past. Now, I know this is a separate building, but maybe we are moving to a point whereby recruitment might not be as big as an issue because it seems a more attractive place to come and work and work with people and grow your career. We shall see, though. I'm trying to be positive. No water on Gola Island. Frequent outages in Inishowen, Milford and Letamacha Ward and Dookery, and thousands on boil water notices. But Uisce Éireann employees get bonus payments bigger than many people's salaries. Aren't they earning it, though? Big bonuses. Next, I'm only joking, actually. Last time I tried to say something like tongue-in-cheek like that, I think I said that It was something to do with a political person, and I sort of jested that they were doing a great job, even though I wasn't saying they weren't. And I got hammered for it because people thought I was serious. So I'm going to have to be a little bit more careful in that regard. Okay, now we're joined on the programme by Sean Moynihan, CEO of Alone. Hi, Sean. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, delighted to be here. Thank you.
Really troubling findings, really. We've talked on this programme for years about homelessness in older people, and we kind of talked about it very much into the future. You know, people who can't get homes now, what happens when you hit 65, 70? You're still in rented accommodation, pensions maybe not covering. So we often talk about something down the line. But unfortunately, at the moment, homelessness in Ireland amongst the older adult population is a lived reality, and Alone, of course, right across this. What is this report showing us in terms of the extent of things at the moment, Sean?
Well, I suppose the report that was launched the other day by Simon sort of shows, you know, the increase of homelessness and access to services from older people across all homeless services across the country. I think the reality is, like all homelessness, it's the thin end of the wedge of housing issues. And with an ageing population, right, and with a huge collapse in the percentage of people who own, we have, in the last census, 83% increase in those retiring into private rented. Now, the question is simple. How do you pay the rent when you retire? We all worry, we all know, our incomes will drop radically when we retire. And if you were bereaved or lost a spouse that you were renting with, you would be further compromised that you would have no chance of being able to pay your rent.
And the way I look at it is the reality of this new government auto-enrolment pension scheme, it could be actually just to try and bridge the gap between rent now and rent into the future. It's probably more than that, but who's to say? We are in something of a unique position here, I think, though, Sean, in that we know the demographics, right? We know home ownership now. We know how many people we anticipate to be over a certain age at a certain time. We are equipped to be preparing for it if there is a will.
Absolutely. Look, we've done the numbers of the housing demand we feel for an ageing population all the way to 2040, because that's the lifetime of the National Development Plan. And what it shows is, with decreasing house size, if we build smaller 1 and 2 bedroom units, and if you take all the social housing, older people will probably need 25% of that. But even in general population, we need to build a lot more. We figure around 123,000 1 and 2 bedroom housing units across the country to meet that aging demographic. And the housing building should reflect the community. And the community is getting older and the family sizes are smaller. So we should be adjusting what we're building to meet that demand. Mm-hmm. And because we know, you know, unfortunately, maths doesn't change. And anybody who's on their own, who probably hasn't bought by the time they're 45, probably isn't going to buy because of the way mortgages, etc. work. So behind that 83% increase in those renting over 65 is those at 50, at 55 and 60. And how does it feel now if you're renting at 60, knowing you're coming towards the ending of your working life, or are you running the risk that your health might get poor? Right? Or you might lose a partner if you have one, or if you're on your own. And ultimately is, we have to be building for this generation. And the great thing about housing is it's there for the next generation and the next generation. It is a great investment. You know, there's a great saying, housing is dear in the short run and cheap in the long run.
And this is one of those topics where people might think we're talking about older people. And of course we are. But I'm also talking to 35, 40, 45-year-olds now who might be quite content renting, or who might be really depressed because they can't get onto the property market. That 10, 15, 20 years comes around very quickly. And we could have a whole raft of the population. You know, I think at 60, 65, 70, you should have some security in tenure. You know, not that you have to pack everything into a box and move to another place because someone decides they want to sell the house that you're living in. You know, this is the reality people in the middle of their working lives are going to be facing far quicker than they realise.
Oh, look, absolutely. And that's why, this affects the whole population. And I think the reality is that in old age, housing is about safety and security. The reason people push to buy is that, the state pension, which a huge amount of people live on, and then people contribute to private pensions, generally tend to be relatively modest. So the point is what a house does, it gives you safety and security. Because unfortunately, no matter how active you are, no matter how effervescent, everybody will face periods of either ill health or possibly frailty, or living hopefully into advanced old age, into their 80s and 90s, which is not unusual anymore where it was. So a housing is safety and security. Now, having to move home at 35, if you lost and you lost your private rent, it is traumatic and difficult. Now, try doing that at 65. You're not very attractive to renters or to the landlords, even though they might be really good people, the landlords. But at the end of the day is if they know they're going to sell in 5 or 10 years' time, they're not going to give the house, because even on a compassionate basis, they don't want to be asking a 75-year-old to move out. But when you move at 60 or 70 or 75, if you lose your private rent, you lose your community, you lose your healthcare. If you're religious, you might lose your connection to your church, you lose your social activities. And really, that's going to also damage your health.
The problem, though, that this is a problem we have in this country, we shouldn't really be talking about the need for 123,000 houses, right? That should be accepted. The conversation we should be having now, and it should be government-led and across the population, is, well, what kind of houses are we going to build? We know we need them, so are we going to have, a unit of 20 houses here so that people have company? They're all on one floor, right? So we don't have people living in a three-bed, two-storey house confined to the lower floors, etc. I've spoken to people in the past that are living in 4 or 5 bedroomed houses. They would love to be able to switch to a smaller house and indeed approach the council with, but we don't have a pathway for that to happen. So rather than trying to argue what houses we need, Sean, we should be accepting we need these houses and having a really good conversation, a positive conversation about what kind of houses are they? What's the design of them? Where are they going to be?
And I think you're right. I think the reality of it is that, if we build those smaller units, just to go back to a point you made, right, around the country, then people would have the choice to right size in old age. And ultimately, is might take that choice, because an awful lot of research shows people would right size in old age if it was in their own community. So if we build those smaller units, they're there. I think what I'd say to you is you're dead right. These are the conversations we have. I think we've spent so much time arguing over the numbers. And like pensions, like everything else, maths doesn't lie. The ageing population exists. The younger people who need housing exist. And at the end of the day is we get caught up in the numbers rather than the conversations of what do we need to build? Where do we need to build it? And then start looking at the art of the possible. How are we going to make that happen? And I think a strategic switch in the conversation, as you describe, is ultimately what's needed.
Yeah, and another thing to chuck in here, we can't discuss it now, but, a 35, 40-year-old now, less dependence by the time they hit 60, 65, 70, 75, maybe 60 is a bit low. We're not having 13 kids or 5 kids anymore. There's one or two, and oftentimes they're not in this country. So there's an awful lot of significant...
It's another absolutely fabulous point that why we need to build a housing to provide that safety and security, because the state has relied, and quite possibly correctly, on families and friends and community, and they've all done an excellent job sometimes when older people or people with disabilities needed support, and as long as they're respecting what people matters to that person. But at the end of the day is that's not going to be there. So we need to have the buildings, we need to have the supports in the community. We're on another day we'll talk to you about everything we're trying to do to bring those supports into the communities. But the housing and the supports in the communities go together hand in hand. But without the buildings, we haven't got a chance.
And instead of advancing, we're sending out €6,000 tax bills to 80-year-old men looking after their wives. Okay, look after yourself. Thanks very much, Sean Moynihan, CEO of Alone. Some good news on potholes, it would seem. This coming to us from Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly. Potholes on Rock Hill to New Mills Road are to be fixed today at some point, if not definitely be tomorrow. I'm not telling anyone how to do their job, but get the water out of the pothole before you fill it. Potholes at Kidley-Laston Road also being fixed today or tomorrow. So that's good news. So a lot of those potholes that you were raising with us, listeners, they're going to be fixed either today or tomorrow. If we get any update on any other ones, we'll bring that to you as well, of course. We're sorting stuff out with you and live, aren't we? Smart speakers are the new home radio thanks to things like TuneIn. I've Highland set up to come on in the kitchen automatically about half an hour after I get up on weekdays. Well, I hope you get up at least before 8:30 so I'm on the smart speaker. There's ads run on those smart speakers before it starts streaming. They're not our ads, they're just ads from TuneIn. But anyway, just by the by, in case you ever wondered, well, why does it cut in halfway through a sentence? That's why TuneIn stick them in. Right, okay. Any other stories in relation to that? Let us know. I really do believe the future of... I don't think people are going to have wirelesses in their houses. I think the number at the moment is getting smaller all of the time, and smart speakers are so blooming convenient, aren't they? The chief executive of Derry City and Strabane District Council has been invited to a meeting in Strabane to discuss the burgeoning rates burden on traders. The meeting has taken place in the Eco Basket in Strabane this evening at 7 p.m. We're being told that Strabane needs practical solutions. Owner of Eco Basket, Strabane, Niall Speak, is with me now. Hi, Niall. Good morning to you.
Hiya, how are you?
I'm doing good. Right, so what is the current state of play for businesses in and around Strabane?
Yeah, look, it's getting ever tougher. And as I said, it doesn't help with the pressures we're under in terms of, obviously, the evidence produced by the Department of Finance in terms of the rates, which, you know, is quite shocking, you know, especially for an area like Strabane.
And is it having an impact on business, i.e., you know, either opening or actually staying open and in business?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in terms of business rates alone, they're the second highest in the whole 11. You know, it's really unfair because obviously, while business is certainly in there.
All right, okay, listen, we'll switch phone lines. That's just not working very well. So we'll get back to that if need be. Or if Caroline believes we've got the message there, that's a meeting taking place in the Eco Basket in Strabane. It's up to you, Caroline. Yeah, whatever you think's best. I think we've got more to hear from Niall. Enoch Burke, in some country we live in, when a guard got a 3-month suspended sentence for a brutal assault on his wife, it was on primetime last night, and yet Enoch Burke is suspended from his teaching job for not calling a student they and sent to jail for his beliefs. Thank you. But you know he wasn't sent to jail for his beliefs. He was sent to jail because he was dismissed for very public disagreements with the management of the school. But I'm not going to keep saying that because, as I said at the start of the show, some people, that doesn't really interest them. My PSA reading has doubled. Both my brothers had prostate cancer. I was referred to the Rapid Clinic in Galway. My wife called to see when I was on the list, and I could be a year before I was called. Now, there's a serious problem there. This is really important. And I just don't want to leave that comment there with our listener. But you've got a family history of prostate cancer. Your readings have doubled. So you're doing the right thing. Okay, you're keeping track of your PSA. How can a rapid access clinic tell you that it could be a year before you're called? Is it to do with the numbers and maybe they need to reassure you that they're happy with the numbers at the moment? I don't know the ins and outs of it, right? But that's no good at all. We'll see if we can get more information in relation to that. Caller says, read the community hospital recruitment for Letterkenny Hospital and the community hospital are entirely different things. I understand that. I was kind of talking more of the sort of the health ecosystem, but maybe you're right. I was just trying to be a little bit positive. Niall, sorry about that. Good to have you back on the show. So what is the message for the chief executive if he were to turn up, or if they were to turn up at this meeting this evening?
Yeah, I mean, look at it. I mean, action needs to be taken now, really. I mean, we've seen from the Department of Finance that they have obviously set their rates for each council area, and the rates are the exact same for each council area set by the executive. But looking at on paper in terms of what they're in, Strabane have set their rates predominantly in non-council. So it's, I mean, it's for want of a better word, it's a bit greedy, to be honest with you. And if they don't take action now, then I think Strabane, even as a town, if you compare it even for next year, it might even cease to exist if it continues on the way.
And that meeting tonight, Niall, I presume all businesses have been invited. Have you got any information yet as to whether the council will be represented? Okay, that line's not any better. But listen, that meeting, sometimes it just doesn't work out. We've tried many different ways. We were discussing yesterday a campaign to improve the experience of a wheelchair user in Buncrana. Wheelchair users in Buncrana is exactly what I'm talking about here. Stuff that if you get around on your feet, you might not realise. Uneven footpaths, or you're shaking around in your chair. And we heard yesterday concerns that sometimes you can feel you're toppling over, or you may top over. The drop curbs, sometimes, you know, whilst they might appear to an able-bodied person to be doing the job, they aren't actually, because there's still a step, and wheelchairs can struggle to get up and over them. And of course, this is not just wheelchair users. It could be people who are visually impaired, tripping hazards, etc. And I think we've a lot of work to do right across the county in relation to this. But this caller says, try going down Letterkenny Main Street in a wheelchair, especially outside the Four Lanterns or the pavement ramps outside the TK Maxx strip. It's no laughing matter, but the council will do nothing as is usual. Tell us a little bit more about what the experience is. On breast cancer, Greg, the mammogram unit is a van in a car park outside the council offices where everybody can see who's going there. Many women are embarrassed to go, and women in wheelchairs have the added embarrassment of waiting for a small lift to descend. If it were a majority of men getting breast cancer, it would not be a van in a car park, but a proper clinic in the local hospital. Misogyny is real. Why isn't the unit at the hospital? Because the car park is private. The thing, the irony of this is that message came in yesterday, and since then we've been talking about slow access to the rapid access prostate cancer, which exclusively affects men. So I think rather than you sort of an intersex kind of a issue, we all need to sort of work together and go, you know what? Not good for anyone. On the issue of vapes, a lot of conversation on that yesterday. Greg, the government have backed themselves into a corner in relation to vape stores now, as it would be seen as racist to even speak about the people who own and run all the vape shops in Ireland. Well, listen, there's people of different nationalities and races that run vape shops, but this caller seems to suggest it's one cohort of people. Shock treatment doesn't work. Take it from someone who started smoking at the height of black lungs on TV. They roll their eyes as you tell them. This is young people, because they know better than you in their own heads. Shops need cracked down on. I was getting served from 15 because they never ever ID'd unless you looked like a baby. And that was something that came in yesterday, and I read it yesterday. On the Beckhams, a lot of you messaging on this too. Is young Beckham a man or a mouse? Read the dance. All he had to do was say, I'm dancing with my wife. It looked like he's afraid of mummy. That was another thing that I thought was a bit strange. If you don't like something, it's your day. You just say, I'll own your mum. Give a second. This is our dance here. You know, you don't just take it and then moan publicly on social media, do you? And on that issue, come on, Greg, that's their wedding. It's not exactly superfluous. Not like they get a redo. I'm falling out with me ma if she ever tried this crack or disrespect my wife in that way. But respect goes in both directions as well. And as I say, you have the power over that day, but maybe it's easier said than done. Now, as part of the Barnesmore Gap Greenway project, there'll be an information evening in the Abbey Hotel, Donegal Town, Tuesday the 3rd of February at 7 p.m. And we've a couple of minutes just with Councillor Jimmy Brogan to give this a push. Good morning, Jimmy.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Good, good. So what's on the table? Have we got sort of outlined routes, or are we right at the very beginning of this process? It would be a wonderful thing if it was constructed.
Yeah, well, the route's sort of designed. The route's ready to go. Now they're talking with farmers and landowners at the minute to purchase the land that they need. So it's ongoing, like, you know, so it's in the middle of the process. Not exactly sure when it'll start, but they're hoping if all goes well, it could be started, you know, maybe in the next year or so, like, you know, so, and then it'll take a year or two then to develop, you know, so. But it's on the way. It's sort of the middle of the process at the moment.
Does it generally follow the route of the road through the gap?
No, well, it generally follows the old railway line.
But it's not that elevated, surely, is it?
It moves slightly here and there, but it'll be following the railway line the other side of the road, the other side of the river. From the gap, from the where you go through the gap, it'll be following it'll be on the other side of the road, you know. So, and then there'll be several points where it'll come. There'll be bridges and there'll be areas where people can get on it, you know. From there'll be a place of buddies where you can access it, or the place then, you know, through the gap where you can access it, and then at the roadhouse and towards Balbuffet, then there'll be another access.
Oh, brilliant stuff. Jimmy, thank you for that. Local businesses, community groups and people in general from the area are advised to go along and see what's happening and have your say in relation to that. It's a public event in the Abbey Hotel, Donegal Town, on Tuesday the 3rd of February at 7 p.m.
Your viewpoint, your region, your show, The Greg Hughes Show.
Yes, indeed. On the issue of Enoch Burke, a caller says, come on, Greg, it all started with his beliefs. I don't dispute that. I know where you're coming from, but the reason he's in prison is because he keeps going back to the school. But I'm not going to keep saying the same thing over because it does annoy people, I think. On the issue of breast care, I work as a radiographer and I worked on mobile scanners in many areas. The mobile scanner location is chosen due to accessibility and power supply. It needs a three-phase PowerPoint, I'm told. On the issue of prostate cancer, Councillor Meehan is right. I was told I'd have my prostate appointment in a 20-day turnaround, but in reality, when I call the clinic, it's 9 to 12 months, maybe longer. Can we have some more instances of this, please, just so we get a greater sense of what's going on? This rapid access prostate treatment centre in Galway, 20-day turnaround. Now we're being told by one listener it could be a year, another 9 to 12 months. What is going on? Another caller says, it's great to hear one of our local councillors raising a serious topic like cancer. I listened to one of their meetings recently and all they talked about was dog poo instead of telling people to ring the litter warden. Good show, Greg. Thank you. In fairness to the councillors, so what's discussed in the council chamber is one thing. And then there's opportunities where there's a regional health forum. Councillor Meehan is part of that, where they've got an opportunity to raise health specific matters. So just because you might hear a conversation about more mundane stuff, though dog poo very important to a lot of people, it doesn't mean that's there's better spaces sometimes to raise these issues and to discuss these matters. Right, we're joined on the programme now by Danny. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Craig.
Lovely to chat to you. There was an article out in the papers recently that reads, taxi shortage affecting rural pubs as staff and customers can't get home. And you were watching a programme last night that brought home this reality to you, and thanks so much for texting us. What's the situation, Danny?
Craig, it's just, me and my friends, I were having this conversation at Christmas, and this is an ongoing issue for a long time. The programme has stated, it's a Garda Patrol programme in RTÉ that has stated that Saturday nights basically are dying, and that was the guards' words on the programme, that they're not as busy as they used to be. I live in a wee small village 20 minutes from Letterkenny, and we have three pubs in our town. There's no taxis. There's no way home. There's no way to go out. There's no way to come home. So at the end of the day, you have to sit in. That's the main reason in my town, I would say, why the pub scene is dying. There's no safe way home. Now, the drink driving had been brought up in that show as well. I do not condone the drink driving whatsoever, but we see it.
Yeah. Because, as you say, they're making the wrong decision, but people feel they have no other choice. So if you and your mates want to head to one of the local pubs, three of them, say you just want to meet up at 8 and get a taxi home then at 12, firstly, A, 100%. You can't get a taxi there and you can't get a taxi home because the local person, they knock off at 7, which is up to them when they decide to run, I suppose.
Because they work all day. Yeah, it's an early start, to fully understand. You know, you can't expect somebody to work 24 hours. But even like if I go back to when I was 18 or 19, we had three, maybe four taxis in the same town. The lifts was never a problem. I just can't understand in 2026, in this day and age, where the population is growing, taxi and lift homes and everything like that is getting lesser. It doesn't fathom. Now, for the crack, we had looked into if you were going to start up a taxi. I don't blame the taxi men. I don't blame them whatsoever. I blame the government. I blame the insurance companies. Everything is through the roof. If you want to be a first-time taxi driver, your premium of insurance is up to €10,000 for your first year. Mm-hmm. That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And if you were a disability-adapted taxi, it can be up to $50,000. That it makes no sense whatsoever.
Mm. Yeah. Some pubs, and I think it's a great idea, do this sort of pick-up, drop-home situation, but I presume they have to have a certain
radius,
level.
Within the miles.
But they have to have a certain population, and I suppose with the profit margins they have,
exactly,
it has to make sense, and it often doesn't. So does this...
And if there's nobody in the pubs drinking, Craig,
well,
if there's nobody they don't have a lot of people in the pubs drinking, is it paying them?
So does this mean that you and your mates socialise in pubs less than, Danny? Is that the actual reality that you go, you know what, we'll not bother going
100%.
Out on Saturday, it's not worth it?
There's no point. And if we go to Letterkenny, to come home, it's €60 in a taxi.
Mm.
If we do get one in Letterkenny, if you do stand long enough to get one in Letterkenny, it's between €60 to €65 just to drop into the town. If you're into the town where we live, if you're outside the boundaries of the town, that meter keeps going up.
And the truth is, no harm to them.
Going out,
they're not mad to do long runs either, because they can do
not
maybe
at
five.
All. They'll put the window back up and they'll say cheerio. You know, it's just like, for instance, a night over Christmas there when we're all going out. You know, yourself, we gather in one house for pre-drinks. Even you can't get a taxi to leave the house to go. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To stay in the house, have fun. So I understood exactly when it came up on the TV programme then on Monday night. I'm like, it's not just Donegal then, because this guard was talking about Monaghan. You know, I've got family that live down the country there. It's the exact same. It's not just Donegal. It seems to be happening nationwide. You know, populations are going up. Everybody knows that. Small towns, the population's going through the roof. But yet and all, the options for it are going down. It just, it makes you, it beggars belief.
Yeah, it's a really interesting insight, Danny, because it's a reality. So there's three of you there, maybe more, who would love to go out socialising but simply cannot do so because it's not practical. So it's a six-pack and a karaoke machine at yours then, Danny?
The poor neighbours.
I'll be there at 8:30 Saturday evening. I've got my list.
No, I just seen it in the papers as well today. So it is obviously a subject. It's a taboo that's around plenty of households, I'd say.
What I'm interested to now is to see how many people out there relate to you, because it's great to hear the actual reality of when you connect all these pieces together. Thank you so much, Danny, for your time. I do appreciate it. Look
no
after
bother.
Yourself.
Thanks for the phone call, Craig.
Bye-bye.
You
Thank
too.
You. So is that a situation you can relate to, whereby you literally have curtailed going out because getting to a venue or getting home for a venue is completely impossible? Or maybe you work in the taxi industry and you can give us some sort of an indication into the practicalities of it. I suppose in a small rural area, if you had 10 taxis at closing time, they would all be full, but those 10 taxis might sit empty between 9 and whatever time pubs close. I don't even know what time pubs close now, because I'm mostly home before 12, but you know, maybe you have an insight. You work in the taxi industry and you can tell us why it wouldn't be practical to run a taxi in a rural area. The person that works in that area knocks off at 7. They're working all day. They've their time done. It's their business. I do some bus work and I'd wanted to do some taxi work, but I'm dyslexic. There's no support out there for me to learn the 100 questions to get the taxi license. I've been on to TDs and others and still no change. That's interesting. I did not realise that that was a prerequisite. So you have to answer 100 questions to get a taxi licence. What are they in relation to? I mean, A, you've passed your test so you know how you can drive. Thanks, Don Marie. A, you've passed your test so you know how to drive. And B, I mean, if you don't know where you're going, you use sat-nav or whatever. I mean, what would the 100 questions be in relation to? Any insight into that too? That's only really kind of to satisfy my own curiosity. This caller says that lady is exactly right about the taxi situation for pubs. The Letterkenny pub scene is dying because there are no taxis anymore. I'm in my late 40s now, but when I was in my 20s, you couldn't move around Letterkenny Street without bumping into a taxi. I would not be bothered going into town anymore because, you know, you'll be waiting an hour for a taxi in the pouring rain. Something needs to be done to save the pubs. One alternative, and it's a bit of an extreme, is marry into a family that have lots of taxis. That's that can work in your advantage. We're joined on the programme now by journalist Eamon McDermott. Hi, Eamon.
Hi, Greg.
Thanks for joining us. Now, we're talking about a really troubling case of a man who placed his dead father in a refrigerator. He's been jailed for 3 years. What's the background to this case, Eamon?
Well, it's a rather bizarre case, as you can imagine. The background is that in 2024... after a concern for safety report by the dead man's daughter, police broke into a house in the Cumbrae Road and found the body of the 86-year-old Mr. O'Sullivan wrapped in tarpaulin with various wipes in his mouth and like that. And one part of him was in one fridge and there was another fridge open beside him. Now, when police found this, there was nobody in the house. But a short time later, the defendant from yesterday's case, John Garrett, was 56, was spotted walking up the Cumbrae Road toward the house and police detained him. Now, it seems there's no suggestion that that he actually killed his father, but he had not reported the death and he had taken steps, what he thought, to preserve the body. So, as I say, rather bizarre and strange case.
Yeah, how was his father in two fridges?
Well, his head was in one fridge and the rest of the body was stretched out.
Okay.
The fridge beside it and a fridge open, his body wasn't actually in two fridges.
The second fridge was outside
of the body.
Now, he said in evidence that he felt, in conversation with police, he felt that if he rang for an ambulance, his father would have been put in a fridge in Alton O'Galvin Hospital, and he decided to preserve his father's body using the two fridges as you outlined. To what end, though? Was it outlined what his plan was thereafter, or how long he intended to preserve his dad for?
Well, we know, but some of the indications would be he contacted, I think it was a funeral home in Donegal, Buncrana, to ask them about what conditions you need to bury a body. Do you need a priest? Do you need a undertaker, et cetera, et cetera? And the suggestion seems to be that he was thinking of burying the body himself. Now, it never went any further, that's what we don't know, but he also contacted his local GP, asking them what is the procedure in the event of a sudden death. So, he was thinking along the lines of disposing the body of himself. By the looks of things, it was never said explicitly, so we don't know for definite.
So, what was he actually found guilty of then? Because there's a few different things going on here.
Yeah, he was found guilty of preventing the lawful burial of a corpse. And that's the actual crime itself. So he wasn't found guilty of anything else in terms of towards the body. But preventing a lawful burial is a crime. You're not allowed to prevent a lawful burial. And the judge did say that, you know, it would have caused distress to the rest of the family, etc. And it was matters of dignity and that sort of stuff. But the actual offence was simply preventing a lawful burial.
And was the court sympathetic to John Garrett O'Sullivan?
Well, I suppose the wrong word, sympathetic. They did take account. Now, obviously, the man has issues.
Mm.
You know, this is not behaviour of a normal person. So, the man has issues. And they did take into account. Although, the sentence of 3 years, now he will have that served. He has served. If he's not out, he'll be out very shortly. It represents sort of what... there's mostly no other choice but to give him a sentence like that, but he couldn't get any longer as such because there was no indication that of any other crime. I think if there had been a wider crime, or they had a thought that he was anyway involved in his father's death, it would have been a different matter.
Yeah, and of course, too, we have to be, and the court was keen to point out, and we have to be sympathetic to the fact that his actions denied family and friends of the normal process that we've become accustomed to, a wake, formal burial, etc.
Yeah, that's, the judge did make that point, that the family was denied all that, and also on top of that caused no end of distress. It's wondering just exactly what had gone on as far as their father's final hours. He gave one description of the father. He says raving and telling him to get lost, and then he says he went to bed and came back the next morning and he found his father dead.
Yeah.
That's his version. But the family, I suppose, will always be asking themselves, is that the right version? Is that what happened? Or is there something else went on or what? It's quite distressing for the rest of the family. He's got two sisters, and I'm sure it's very distressing for them.
A lot of unanswered questions, and that is sometimes the most difficult part of a loss, and they have to endure that going forward.
Well, that's it. They're always going to be asking themselves what did happen, what exactly. They'll never know what exactly happened. I know, I could their father have been saved if there had been medical intervention at the right time and all that sort of stuff. That's something that's going to plague them probably forever.
Mm. Okay, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time. Eamon McDermott there. That is following the conviction there of John Garrett O'Sullivan. And just in relation to how he treated his father's body after its death, after his death, he wrapped the 86-year-old in a duvet and in clear plastic tarpaulin sheets. He also placed a nappy on his head, on his dead father's head and hands, and wrapped him in dry night bedding and placed a wet wipe cloth into his father's mouth. So you can imagine, whilst it was accepted that O'Sullivan had suffered significant mental health issues following his PhD graduation from university in Dublin in 1997, that still, obviously, his actions have caused great distress. He was found to have, well, as you heard outlined there by Eamon, you heard what he was convicted of, but also, of course, sympathy with his family, the family of the deceased, his daughters and others. A lot of unanswered questions as to, well, they were outlined there. I have to be careful with my words, too, in that regard. I'm joined on the programme now by Majella O'Donnell. Good morning, Majella.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. How are you keeping? I hope you're well.
Oh, I am. No, I'm very good, thank you.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. In a recent radio interview, you revealed that in 2024 you spent 10 weeks in hospital for clinical depression. And obviously, given your profile, this story has been picked up everywhere. And, it's really important, actually, because I think an awful lot of people will be able to relate to your story. Were you intending to discuss this, Majella, or did it just feel like the right time to open up, I suppose some people would frame it?
No, nothing like that at all. I mean, I've been very, very vocal always about having depression. I've always talked about it, always said that I was on medication. It was just the interview that I was doing. I had mentioned it actually not long after it happened, on an interview, I think it was with Donegal Daily.
Mm.
And I was on RTE One yesterday with Oliver Callaghan, and obviously their researcher had seen it on Donegal Daily and asked me about it. So I just said, yep, that's right, I was. And yes, it seems again to have gone, mad. It's everywhere. It's on it. Social media, everything that I was in there, but it wasn't like intentional to, it wasn't a big announcement or anything like that. Yeah. It was just something that happened 2 years ago and nobody's ever asked me, and I've never had the opportunity to, it just hasn't come about because I've always talked about, as I said, having depression. It was just, this is the first time I ended up in hospital with it.
And what led to that hospitalisation? What was particular about this episode of poor mental health that was so, that required such an intervention, Majella?
I think it was just, I have been dealing with it, I suppose, since my late teens. And I think it was just, I felt that I couldn't cope with it myself anymore. I have, gone to places of, very dark places, throughout the years, not a huge amount, but I've always sort of managed to, I suppose, come out of it myself, or to, I suppose, just give myself time and to just start to come out of it again. But this time I just didn't feel like I had the energy, or I just felt like it had worn me down, you know, and that, you know, I just can't do this anymore. I need help. I just can't handle it myself anymore. And I just kind of went to the GP and said, you know, I've had enough. You know, I just really was beaten, if you like. Mm. And it was a case of, well, I was just sitting in a corner at home, vegetating. And, you know, I thought, if I don't speak to the doctor or get some help, I just don't know what the outcome is going to be. So that's really why I went to the doctor. And he recommended or suggested would a residential stay. And I just said, look, anything, just anything. To get me out of this place now. And that's what I did.
And there was even in the depth of that depression, thankfully, Majella, you had that sort of self-awareness to say, right, I'm not going to get out from under this myself. Do you think that was helped by your maturity? I wonder if 20-year-old Majella was feeling like that. Would you perhaps have made the same decisions, you know, to say, right, I can go to a GP and there is help there?
Yeah, I don't think I would have known it, to be honest with you, Greg. I wasn't even aware that I could do it, to be honest with you. I thought if I could just go somewhere that maybe they could help me, you know, with therapies or whatever, or better drugs or something. I thought that would be fantastic, but I really didn't think it was an option for me. I don't know why. I mean, I have VHI, as lots of people do, and you know, as is always the case, I've already seen on social media, oh, you know, typical, she has money so she can go in, it's easy for her, you know. I have VHI, nonsense, yeah. Lots and lots of people have VHI, and it was covered on VHI, as it is for, I'm sure, most people, maybe all people. And as I said, I didn't think enough. I don't know whether I thought I had to be a lot worse or what. I don't know. I wasn't even thinking properly, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And I just thought somebody, I'd given up. I suppose that's what it was. I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I give up. I relinquish myself to the doctors because I cannot fight this anymore. That's just the way I felt at that time.
It's very difficult when you're in the depths of something like that to introduce reason into to the situation. Like, so at that point...
Absolutely, it is.
At that point, were you able to think only of yourself, or were you thinking of, well, what's the impact on people around me? What's the impact on so-and-so and so-and-so? Or were you just so deep into this episode that was not relevant? This was just about
you surviving. Absolutely. I was just surviving. That into it. No, I didn't. I was just... I was hardly even thinking, to be honest with you. I think Daniel really probably said, you know, you need to go up to the doctor, you need to speak to him. I was just kind of sat in the corner and, you know, I said, oh, I don't want to go up. I didn't even want to do that. And he was saying, I'll, you know, make an appointment for you. And so he did phone up and then I went up. And, but yeah, I was gone past thinking about everybody else. I was just in a complete and utter rut, I suppose. I couldn't reason. I couldn't think straight. I just was worn. It was like I was worn out. It was like I just was empty and everything was numb. Everything was dead within inside me. Terrible, terrible place to be.
In retrospect, how long do you think you were building to that low ebb for?
Gee, I don't know, Greg, actually. I don't, I can't remember. I don't know, to be honest with you. You see, sometimes, you know, I know when I'm kind of going into a dark place, I suppose. Sometimes I do. I can feel maybe if I'm under stress or if I haven't had a lot of sleep, I can feel it starting. But this seemed to, I don't know, it just seemed to get there very fast from what I can remember.
It can be hard to figure out what our normal is, if I could use that word, because there's lots of people walk around with poor mental health. They, you know, they live their life and things don't feel right, but they believe that that's the case with everybody, and everybody gets stressed, everybody can't sleep, everybody be quiet sometimes because their mind is racing on them, whatever it might be. So I can understand how it can be hard to find the level where, you know, you can go above or below. I think people who don't suffer from bad mental health or poor mental health, or however everyone wants to phrase it, is that it's not associated with happiness or positive things in your life or wealth. It cuts through all of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've kind of said, you know, I've done talks on mental health before, and you know, and I've said to people, you know, I know you probably, as I'm standing up here now, think, what has she got to be depressed about? You know, she's got a nice husband, she's no money worries, she's, you know, healthy kids, whatever. What's she got to worry about or to be depressed about? And that's exactly the point. Because even though you have what you might seem like everything to everybody else, it doesn't matter. It cuts through all of that. It's not about that at all. And I've before I met Daniel, you know, I was 40, remember, when I got married. I had had a life, a very hard life, with a very tough marriage breakdown. And I was suffering from depression at that time as well. I was on medication. I've got a very dry mouth, so I'm just drinking. And then I meet someone like Daniel, and my life turns around. And yet I still have depression. So if anything, it makes you feel worse, because you think, oh my God, what is wrong with you? You know, some people can say, if only I had a happier marriage, if only I had a nicer house, if only I had some money, if only... It doesn't. None of that matters when it comes to mental health.
I would phrase it like it can be a numbness to good or bad news. So then you would question, well, why am I not excited about this great news? Or even, you know, why am I not responding traditionally to this bad news?
It's a numbness. That's what it is for me. It's like just being numb to life, to all the good, to, you know, to not having any joy in your life, just living. That the joy of living is gone. That's the way I felt. That all the joy of living was just, it was gone. I didn't have any joy in it at all. And, you know, that's just such a terrible way to feel. And you can feel so guilty as well, you know, because you think, this is shocking. I should be so much happier. I should be fine. Or people are a lot worse off. All that sort of stuff. You know all of that, but it just doesn't. It doesn't cut the mustard. It doesn't make you any better. You know. Mm-hmm.
And I think just while this conversation is particularly useful as well, additionally useful, is for people to understand why people make decisions and they go, well, how, you know, could they do that with young kids, or how could, I'm not getting into the nitty gritties of it, but I think people need to understand when people are incredibly depressed or in that space, again, logic doesn't apply. So the logic that might ordinarily apply, like you would never do anything intentionally to harm someone, but we're talking about a medical condition, that those rules don't necessarily apply.
They don't. And also, you 100% believe that you'll be happier and everybody else will be. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You'll be happier if all the, well, you definitely do. You do believe that if it all stopped, that's like, it's a terrible thing to talk about, really. You know, it really is and not a nice thing to talk about.
No, but I understand.
But that's how you can feel, that you can't handle the pain.
Yeah, but the reason I thought it important to talk about, Majel, is because sometimes if you are bereaved by someone who had very poor mental health, right, you can, I'm just wondering, maybe it might help those people to understand that it's not necessarily their fault, that there aren't always signs, that there aren't always answers, such as the way very bad mental health can make someone feel. You talked about, have you learned anything about yourself, Majella? Because poor mental health is a lifelong journey, right? Have you learned anything about yourself in terms of a point where you now know, right, I think I might be heading down this road again, so that you can, you know, maybe work on things a bit earlier?
Yes. And sometimes, though, as I said, sometimes if you're, well, if I'm, all I can do is talk about myself, obviously. If I'm, you know, really, really busy, it can happen without me realizing it.
Mm.
You know, it can kind of catch me out if I've been really, as I said, going all the time, maybe stressed, maybe tired. Sometimes it can kind of catch up with me, and when, before I know it, like when I stop for, you know, an hour or an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever, and just think, I can think, oh my God, you know, I'm not in a good place. I feel like I'm not in a good place. And it's kind of happened without you being able to get a handle of it, if you like.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, because that's about sort of knowing yourself, self-care, and that's where the commonality is with physical and mental illness. We could be talking about you running yourself down, becoming vitamin deficient, dehydrated, you know,
absolutely,
and ending up in hospital for those reasons as well. Majella, obviously, as you can imagine, lots of people thanking you for speaking out, because it's a difficult thing to talk about, and it's very relatable, and that's clear coming in from our listeners. And I really appreciate your time, and sort of emphasising the point of going and reaching out. Even if you don't have VHI, if you go to your GP, there are pathways and what have you, and supports going down that route as well. They're open to everyone, and everyone should, if they're feeling that way, make that contact, I think.
Absolutely. Talk, you know, that's the thing. It's just, and when I say talk, it just could be saying help, you know, I need help. And that's the thing to do. Absolutely.
All right. The very best wishes to you, Majella. Thank you so much for talking to us. And ignore those, ignore the detractors on social media. You know yourself, you're doing amazing work in advocacy, and we really appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Bye.
All right.
Bye. Regular guest on this program is Rosa Glacken, the Northwestern Regional President of St. Vincent de Paul. Thank you, as always, for calling up to us, Rosa.
Thank you for having me. Good morning, everybody.
We are getting the most recent figures from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, reporting a record level of demand last year. Requests across the 26 counties exceeding 260,000 for the first time. It's a worrying picture, Rosa.
It is absolutely worrying. And as we discussed at Christmas, I felt myself that there would be a surge because December was the usual busy period. But throughout the year, there has been a huge increase. And it's not surprising. We discussed the rising cost of food and fuel. And in particular, people who are working, paying a mortgage and paying the bills, there's really not enough left over to do adequate grocery shopping. And it would worry me that children aren't getting good nourishment through no fault and nobody's fault. Just the cost of living is rising. It's a It's a very worrying time. And also, you might have seen in that the request for energy. We lost out on that in the last budget. They were a great help, the energy credits. We no longer have those. So people are falling into arrears. There's a huge rise in the number of people in arrears for their energy as well.
We need government intervention here. The St. Yes. Vincent de Paul do amazing work, but we have, 330,000 people in arrears in terms of electricity, primarily in our county, but gas as well. Mm-hmm. We don't know the extent of those on pay-as-you-go, how long they're going without electricity, the struggles, because we don't have those figures as well. No. It's a very, very nasty picture in a country that promotes itself as so wealthy.
That's the one where the point that we're making. This is a rising economy, just high employment, and yet here we are with almost over a quarter of a million people seeking assistance. It shouldn't be so. And there's a doubling, actually, in the number of children living in poverty, gone up to 8%. That's huge. And these are children then who are coming to school hungry, cold, and they're not having, you know, what they should have in a healthy childhood. It's very, as you say, we really need a serious government intervention and acknowledgement of that poverty that's out there.
And just in relation to child poverty, if you don't mind me adding as well, if you add in household costs, that figure in terms of child poverty goes up to one in five children.
That's for sure,
I mean, we can't stand over that, Rosa. And we can't rely on the excellent work of St. Vincent de Paul to, you know, we need assistance and in targeted assistance to reach those that need it most.
Yes, and we're concerned with that kind of rise, if that trend continues, there would be huge pressure on us, not only financially, but in the matter of volunteers on the ground. We will need a lot more members to cope with this rise in demand, definitely.
You can support St. Vincent de Paul through their websites or their shops as well. This work that they do is amazing. Often it's funded by those that got help from St. Vincent de Paul in the past. Mm-hmm. Those who've supported St. Vincent de Paul in the past may become those that rely on their services. This is a community and we have to help ourselves and help each other, which we do, but we do, again, sorry, need the government to look at these figures and say this is unacceptable.
Absolutely, we do need that, yes.
And I really want to know how many people are struggling or without power on the pay-as-you-go system. They're forced to pay higher rates for electricity, which is incredibly adding insult to injury.
That is true.
Okay, Rosie, if anyone needs the support of St. Vincent de Paul,
get in touch through our website or if you know any local numbers, but do get in touch and do give us a call.
Okay, thank you so very much indeed for that. I really do appreciate your time. Just time for a couple of comments in relation to our interview with Magella there. Fair play to Magella for speaking about a tough subject. She's an inspiration. The thing about Magella's explanation that she makes it clear, and it took a year for me to comprehend, material things are of no use to your dark brain. I find that very difficult to understand in my husband's case. And I used to get so angry that people were dying of cancer or serious health issues. And here he was with nothing but a dark mind. And why couldn't he just see things clearer? And that is why you don't say to someone with poor mental health, not that that listener did, pull yourself together, because that's not how it works. Hi, Greg. A group of us attended a mental health wellness event in Ungreenon Theatre, and Magella gave a talk that night and was so good to listen to and inspiring. It's great to hear her speak out again about it. God bless Magella. That comes in from Rosaline, Eileen, Josie, Anastasia and Burr. Thank you so much for listening to the programme today, or indeed if you watch the show. We're back to do it all again tomorrow morning from 9:00.